Tucked along the western side of the bottom tip of India, the state is always warm or hot, wet and luxuriant. Coconut palms fringe its beaches and line its roads, crops grow year-round, and Keralans are among the best educated in the country, with a literacy rate of about 98%. It's a traditional source of spices like cinnamon, nutmeg, pepper, and cardamom, but today, its biggest export is its people, who work in businesses and bureaucracies in the Middle East and remit money back home. That cash has boosted Kerala's financial economy, but it has also left it short of people to work the land. There is locally produced rice, but most of the food is imported, and both rice and imports rely heavily on chemicals. Alarm at excess chemicals in food and rising cancer rates caused the Kerala government to pledge to go 100% organic by 2020. Living on Earth's Helen Palmer took a trip there to check it out.
It's pilgrimage season when I arrive in Kerala's capital, Trivandrum. Streets are thronged with devout Hindus wearing black dhotis, the wide length of cotton cloth Indian men wear knotted round the waist. They trudge barefoot from the central railway station to the monumental Sri Padmanabhaswamy Temple, reputedly the richest in the world. To a visitor, it's a reminder of the deep history and traditions still powerful in modern Kerala, which is actually dealing with a modern plague, rising rates of cancer widely blamed on pesticides and chemicals in food. Biju Prabhakar is Director of Agricultural Development for Kerala.
I was a Food Safety Commissioner of the state.
I was Food Safety Commissioner of the state in 2010 to 2013, during which we have found that lots of pesticide residue are on vegetables, then antibiotics on meat and poultry, or even some of the fish sellers or ice factory owners. They were keeping fish in formalin and ammonium sulfate and that kind of chemicals. So this was actually widely publicized in the media that these kinds of spurious material are in our food. And the medical community agreed this is one of the main reasons for the cancer, because Kerala has a high incidence of cancer.
In the 3 years up to 2016, cancer rates in Kerala rose over 10% faster than in most of the country. And two-thirds of cases proved fatal due to a lack of specialized care. Biju Prabhakar says public anxiety and the cancer linked with pesticides in food, much of which is imported, is why there's such urgency to become self-sufficient in local organic produce.
Now people are really aware about this.
Now people are really aware about this. And during the last 3 to 4 years, the production of vegetables has almost doubled. And we're trying to reach the target of nearly around 20 lakh. 200,000 tons of this vegetable to be produced over here. We are just short of that, 100,000. So the state is poised to convert itself to not only vegetables, coconut, everything has to be certified without chemicals.
It has to be without chemicals, without chemicals.
Rice is the main local grain, and though Kerala traditionally grows 600 varieties, most commercial paddy fields are full of high-yielding hybrid strains grown with chemicals. Export crops, spices like black pepper, turmeric and cardamom, and commodities like rubber, coffee and coconuts occupy a third of the state's agricultural land, and farmers favour them over labour-intensive vegetables, partly because there's a shortage of farm labour. That's one result of Kerala's low birth rate, related to the high level of education, which also means there are better paying jobs to choose. And the state has other hurdles to boosting food production to meet its goal of going 100% organic by 2020. Kerala's rice pot is a narrow coastal plain sandwiched between the sea and the Western Ghats, thickly forested highlands in the west.
One major thing which is needed, especially for the poor farmers, is land.
Usha Shulapani, director of the sustainability non-profit Tanal, says that shortage of agricultural land gets worse because fields are given as dowries when girls get married, or is subdivided between the farmer's sons. More than 92% of land holdings in the state are less than half an acre. So farms become too small to be economically viable, and since other jobs pay better, working on the land fell out of favour.
In the last 10-20 years, what is happening in Kerala is that because people were moving away from farming, most of the people who have land, they are into other occupation. So the land is lying fallow. No? So the people start seeing cheap land. So people with other interest come and buy.
This view of land as commodity has led to speculation and urbanization and a real estate boom that caters to Keralans returning from abroad with cash and looking for larger houses. On top of that, says Usha, there's a problem with the agricultural leases for landless farmers. They're too brief.
We need a policy for leasing where the poor farmers need to get land for on a long-term basis, 5 to 10 years like that, not for 1 year.
With a one-year lease, farmers have little incentive to improve the quality of the soil. Agricultural Director Biju Prabhakar says there's a plan to ensure that land doesn't lie fallow if an absentee landlord isn't using it.
So absentee farmers
will not allow not even a single land parcel to remain without cultivation. We are formulating that kind of a law which will encourage the leasing of land to other farmers or farmer collectives. Or otherwise, we are planning to have some kind of a taxation on those who are idling on the land. Ultimately, land is not the property of an individual. It's the property of the state.
Taxing or taking over fallow land is all part of the communist state government's comprehensive Green Kerala program that covers everything from planting vegetable gardens in schools to composting food waste to create biogas. To help generate more income for farmers, Green Kerala mounted an ambitious agripreneurship fair at the former Maharaja's Kanakakunu Palace to showcase ideas to add value to everything, from coconut fibre for shoes and handbags to root vegetables. Technical Officer Sophia Shanavas of the Central Tuber Crop Research Institute points proudly to a pile of unfamiliar knobbly roots of all shapes, sizes and colours. Taro, cassava, yams, and tells me there are endless ways to use them.
Whatever you can prepare in
potato. Whatever you can prepare with potato, we can prepare with all tuber crops. Cassava chips we are having, sweet potato chips we are having, taro chips we are having. Then we have noodles, then we have pasta.
He tells me farmers can bring their crops to the Tuber Research Institute, which will use their fancy machines to turn them into jam and flour and snacks. Cassava is gluten-free, Shanavas tells me, and many of these roots are loaded with antioxidants. Indeed, that's one thing I found most striking. Every food, every spice anyone grows here seems to have some special health benefits. It fights cancer. It's good for the heart. This focus resonates with the Indian tradition of Ayurvedic medicine, and some 30 years ago, Kerala opened the world's first Ayurvedic resort. Several stands at the fair celebrate Jack, the wonder fruit. It's a massive, spiky, yellowish-brown tree fruit, very fibrous and versatile, and very good, I'm told, for fighting diabetes.
From the seed, we make cakes and the biscuits, and from the spikes, we make pickles. It's very tasty and very spicy, okay? And we can make that wine. It's actually banned in Kerala.
No wine in Kerala?
No, there is wine, but it is illegal, okay? From the pulp, we can make juice, jam, squash, a lot of things, halwa.
So jackfruit makes many, many things?
Yes, of course. Around 3,000 products, we can make it from jackfruit.
The palace is packed with curious Keralans keen to try free samples and check out the displays of local fishes and biodiversity. One agriculture officer tells me it's becoming very trendy now to be interested in growing food. But it's no easy task to increase organic food production, and even the productivity of commercial rice is falling, partly due to problems with the soil itself. Kerala's earth is mostly acidic, so it needs lime. That tends to leach out with the heavy rainfall, and feeding the soil properly is vital. But government subsidies don't help the average farmer do that. Despite the ambitious long-term plans to help the switch to organic practices, the state's yearly budgets are always squeezed. The subsidies only cover the cheapest form of nitrogen fertilizer, urea, and not the other major components of healthy soil that organic crops need, such as phosphorus and potassium. Thomas Anish Johnson is a soil survey officer who teaches at Kerala Agricultural University.
The typical India government subsidy is given for the major nutrients only, that too the nitrogen fertilizers. That the urea is mainly subsidized. And the other nutrients are being imported, so they are not given subsidy. Lime is also sometimes not given at a subsidized rate. So lime application is also not practiced mostly.
Give me some idea of what the subsidized price for the fertilizer would be versus what has to be imported.
So here the subsidized urea is given at around 5 rupees per kg. While the other nutrients, that is phosphorus and potash, around 20 to 25 rupees per kg. So that is 3 to 4 times the price of the urea.
Without a thick layer of organic mulch to retain water, urea tends to make the soil more acidic. And not adding minerals, due to the cost, helps create micronutrient deficiencies. Lack of boron and magnesium, for example, affect crop quality and yield. Government figures show Kerala's farmers are inefficient. More generous support could help them improve soil health and the nutritional value of their produce, and that in turn could help public health, ultimately reducing the private and public expense of treating so many cancer cases. And the Agricultural University is dealing with another headache that plagues farmers, a bumper crop of insects. The university is a sprawling, leafy campus outside Thrissur, the cultural capital of Kerala, that's dedicated to improving the state's food, farmers' methods and pest control. Entomology professor Berin Patros, trim and bald with a moustache and glasses, tells me the state's warm tropical climate means that harmful insects, literally, have a year-round field day. He shows off a bunch of them in a large display case in the hall outside his office.
This section carries the pests of fruit crops. Mango, banana, guava, jack, papaya, pomegranate, lychee, grapes, citrus, etc. We have a major pest called mango stem borer.
It's about an inch and a half.
It's more than that if you consider the length of its antennae. It can bore into the heavy trunk of mangoes. It will kill the mango. In the citrus, we have citrus butterflies. It's a very good-looking butterflies. Then coming to the next section is the plantation crops. Kerala is known for several plantation crops where we have coconut, cashew, coffee, arecanut, rubber, ginger, etc.
To combat all these harmful insects, Professor Patros specializes in biocontrol agents, organic methods specific to each pest. But he tells me climate change and the insect's ability to adapt make it a constant cat and mouse game to keep up. His plant pathologist colleague, Resmi Vijaya Raghavan, a slim woman in a colourful sari, says the benefit of biocontrol methods is that they not only build resistance in the plants, they help increase the harvest. Yet she doubts that Kerala can achieve its ambitious goal of totally organic food by 2020.
I wouldn't support total organic cultivation, because once the disease occurs, no biocontrol agents are found to be effective. So in such cases, you have to resort to chemical pesticides. So the halfway organic, halfway chemical pesticides, that is the only way out. If you go for organic cultivation, the farmers might strike with a big loss.
She argues it's particularly the main commercial crop, rice, and spices like black pepper, nutmeg and cinnamon that need chemical treatments. But some traditional methods, such as intercropping, using locally adapted indigenous seeds and crop rotation, could help prevent infestations in the first place. Still, Kerala's developed a whole cottage industry to make biocontrol agents for the farm and home. I drop in on the nerve centre of one of the most energetic groups, headed by a cheerful, determined woman in a brilliant blue and green tunic over bright green pants, who arrives on a motorbike.
Helen.
I am Helen. You are Asharaj.
Asharaj.
I am so pleased to meet you.
Yes.
She takes me to a spartan, functional back room.
I'm agriculture officer. I'm Asha Raj. My name is Asha Raj. And our Kerala government has sent me to National Institute of Plant Health Management, Hyderabad, for understanding about the various technique about the on-farm production of biocontrol agent.
Asha Raj brought that technical know-how back from Hyderabad and now spearheads an SHG, a self-help group of women, many poor and barely educated, who make these biocontrol mixtures at her office. It's a modest, somewhat ramshackle building that doubles as a plant nursery. She says farmers might want to use fewer pesticides, but organic treatments still aren't widely available and they cost too much, so she's passing on what she's learned.
Here, we are training the farmers in such a mode that they can produce these on-farm biocontrol agents in their farm itself.
She shows me the treatments they make. Some feature concentrated cow urine, which she tells me can both kill insects and improve soil. Then there are bottles of biorepellents with garlic and neem oil for pests like thrips. Fruit fly traps powered by pheromones to protect cucumbers. Jars of Pseudomonas and Trichloderma fungi that control soil pathogens.
Shall we go
Oh, I see all your seedlings there. There are rows and rows of pots of plants, rice, tomatoes, eggplants and peppers on the terrace, and Asher Raj tells me they inoculate the roots with helpful fungi called VAM, vesicular arbuscular mycorrhizae, to produce a biofertilizer that helps plants take up nutrients.
These are rice, are they?
Yeah, it's rice, because in the fibrous root system, VAM is very, very much good to grow.
So basically, this is stuff that you grow and then you give to the farmers or sell to the farmers?
Yeah, this is being produced by our SHG and it is supplied to the farmers in the Trivandrum district.
Asha Raj says she's already trained dozens of farmers and it's paying off for them. Their organic crops now sell for prices at least 50% higher than conventional ones. But making those higher prices a reality for every farmer is a steep hill to climb. Usha Shulapani of the non-profit Tanal says what financial help the government does offer needs to be firmly focused not on what's being grown, but on the farmer.
Till now, the whole policy was not farmer-centric. It was crop-centric. Who need to get the support is farmer, not the crop. We have to promote mixed cropping and also crop rotation for the farmers to become sustainable in the both economically and ecologically.
Kerala's agriculture director, Biju Prabhakar, is fine with supporting the farmers, but he says in the name of public health and their own health, people should be happy to pay higher prices for safe, nutritious food.
The farmers have to be subsidized.
Farmers have to be subsidized because they are the persons who are producing. The question is whether you'd like to pay more for foodstuffs or whether you like to pay at least 10 times in the hospital for treatment of some of the disease.
And Usha Shulapani says another shift to make the organic goal a reality is reviving old indigenous varieties. They are more nutritious and could be a hedge against climate change, along with permaculture practices. I'm struck by how the solutions she says Kerala needs sound remarkably like the fixes organic enthusiasts recommend here in the US. Maybe, in the end, since we have just one earth, feeding and caring for the soil is the key to health and nutritious food for all of us, whether we pray to Vishnu or some other god. For Living on Earth, I'm Helen Palmer in Trivandrum, Kerala.